All right, so we're going to speak about Geirus, maybe some contemporary issues in Geirus. It's really a timeless issue. Tosos, Rashba and others point out that there's a pasuk that uses the term Doro Sechem in connection with Geirus, which shows that we always have the ability to do Geirus throughout all of the generations. Even if we don't have Batei Din that are smuchin from Moshe Rabbeinu, there's still the opportunity to do Shlichus, to do Geirus. The Nesivus HaMishpat at the beginning of Chol HaMishpat says, from the fact that we're able to do Geirus nowadays, we see that the concept of Shlichusai of the Kamai Kavdinan, that the Batei Din nowadays, even though we don't have real smicha, so to speak, we don't have a smicha that comes directly from Moshe Rabbeinu, it's just what you might call Netilas Rishus, or imitation of smicha. Nonetheless, we operate as the Shulchan, as the agents of the Daryanim of yesteryear. And this must be a deraisa concept if we're able to do geirus nowadays, because he thought it would be preposterous to say that all the geirim are only geirim midor banim. It must be that it works in a deraisa level. So it could be that our ability to do geirus is based on shlichusayu, and shlichusayu works on a deraisa level. Or it could be that it's a gzeiras akasa l'doros eichem. Maybe you don't need smuchin. Maybe that's what the gzeiras akasa teaches you. Or maybe, according to some Mishonim, normally you would require smuchin. That the Gemara says that it says mishpah, you need a bezdin in connection with the gear. So maybe normally you would require smuchin, but when you don't have smuchin, so then it's good enough to do without smuchin. So I think that's how many assume. But Rav Kook has chuvas in which he talks about how really he thinks that any time that you do a geirus, it does require the mechanism of shlichusayu, so that if you don't have all of the necessary ingredients in place, that this would be an optimal geirus, so to speak, according to the standards of the old time of Dayanim, and you can't cut corners at all. He spoke about a gir katan situation. If you have a young child that you're going to take to the mikveh, and the bezdin has to superimpose its own das. Gir katan mabilin osa das bezdin, like Rabuna says in Maseches Ksubas and Daf Yud Aleph, you require the bezdin to furnish the das, the kabbalah, for the geirus that's done for a child who doesn't have the requisite das, to be able to evince a kabbalah on his own or on her own. So he says that if you don't have a setting where it's quite clear that that the child is going to be brought up in accordance with the utmost standards of Torah and mitzvot, leaving aside any kind of technical problems that might create with respect to the validity of doing a geirus for a ger katan, he says that just on a fundamental level, you don't have a bezdin because you haven't satisfied the shlichusayu component. Shlichusayu means that you have to have an optimal bezdin type of situation where you can determine that this person is going to be set on the proper path, the Torah and mitzvos. Now, Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that if you look at the Gemara in Krisis and Daf Tes, you see that it really outlines every single step of the geirus process as originating in Har Sinai. That Har Sinai, we derive from Sukkim that Bris Milah was performed, so therefore every single geir is a male, requires Bris Milah. And we derive from Sukkim that Tefillah took place, so therefore every single geir requires Tefillah. It used to be that a korban had to be brought as well, but that's the first time that we find the utilization of the pasuk of L'doros Sechem that's brought in the Gemara over there to demonstrate that since we know that geirus is something that can be performed throughout all of the generations, and we know that nowadays we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, so we're not able to bring a korbanos, so it must be that the bringing of a korban is not actually me'akev. Therefore, the assumption is that whatever would be the obligation of a ger to bring a korban, that's not something that holds up the validity of a gerus nowadays. I think most of the poskim, it's a discussion in the Zecha Yitzchak or the Panavishara, the discussion in the Avnei Nezer of Sakachavar, most of the poskim work with the assumption that even those people who are geirim nowadays who did not bring a korban, when Mashiach comes and there'll be the possibility of bringing a korban, so maybe there'll be an outstanding chiyuv for bringing a korban, but it's not going to in any way impinge upon their status of being a ger. There's a question raised by Mizrach Yitzchak in this respect, but I think that's how it's generally assumed, halacha l'maisa. But there are two other aspects of the gerus process that are not explicitly touched upon. The Gemara increases, and one is that you require Kabbalah sol mitzvahs. We know we require Kabbalah sol mitzvahs. The Gemara in Yevamos speaks about how the gerus process mirrors that of the conversation that took place between Naomi and Rus, that Rus became a Gioris Tzedek, and she said, Amei Chami v'lokai ka'lokai. And Amei Chami is a connotation that I know this is a people that keep 613 mitzvahs, and I'm undertaking, I'm going to keep the 613 mitzvahs. Gemara in Bechoris and Daf Lamed says that if you have a person who converts and says, I'm going to accept Kol HaTorah Kula Chutz Midaber Echad, there's only one thing I'm going to leave out. I can't accept this particular mitzvah. I'm not comfortable about the kashrus. I'm not comfortable about the shatness. I don't like shiluach hakana. It doesn't resonate with me. Whatever the mitzvah happens to be, it's going to exclude one out of the 613 mitzvahs. So then it's not going to be a valid gear. So no, Kabbalah sol mitzvahs is definitely me'akev. There's a day in Tosfos that says that even if I held that other aspects of gerus might not be likuva, there's a question as to whether tefillah. A certain Gemara in Yevamos that indicates that a woman didn't convert in front of Beis Din and was saying the Tavla L'Nidusa, didn't she go to the mikvah when she became a Nida, so it doesn't matter that she didn't convert in front of Beis Din. So tefillah, of course, is Miyakeh, but even if tefillah in front of a Beis Din, it's not miyake, but when it comes to Kabbalah sol mitzvos, it says Tosfos, Kabbalah, that the one thing that you indispensably need Beis Din for would be Kabbalah sol mitzvos. So obviously you need all the aspects of the gerus process for the gear to be valid. You can't have a gear without tefillah, you can't have a gear without milah, but there is a possibility that maybe the evid, if the milah or tefillah wasn't in front of a Beis Din, so there's one possibility raised by Tosfos, based on that Gemara, that even if it was in front of a Beis Din, maybe it's valid, but the Kabbalah sol mitzvos for sure has to be in front of a Beis Din. That's how it's possible in the Shulchan Aruch. There's no question that this is the Yikar part of Gir. So where was that? The Har Sinai, so Rav Soloveitchik said that it's obvious this was the centerpiece of Ma'amad Har Sinai. You wouldn't have had Ma'amad Har Sinai, all of the trappings and all of the other ritual acts that were performed in connection with Ma'amad Har Sinai, if you didn't have the actual essence of Ma'amad Har Sinai. What was the essence? The essence of Ma'amad Har Sinai was Kabbalah Satoru. It's when the people said, Na'aseh v'nishma. He said that we accept upon ourselves a Kabbalah Satoru, that we're accepting the Torah. So that's the centerpiece. So what about the Beis Din? We also said that a year in order to be valid, Mishpat Ksibbe, it requires a Beis Din. So where do we find that? Ma'amad Har Sinai. So there were really two different answers that are given in response to that question. One is that the Shekhinah served as the Beis Din. In Ma'amad Har Sinai, you had the Shekhinah. Nowadays, when the Beis Din oversees the Gerus, they're the standing for the Shekhinah. Elokim Nitzav Ba'adas Kerub, Bekerub Elokim Mishpat. That's how the Rav explained it. That's how Rav Yeshua Mikutna explained it. That basically was the ingredient that enabled the Gerus to be valid. The Shekhinah and the Beis Din is a stand-in for the Shekhinah. Beis HaLevi has a different approach. The Beis HaLevi says that at Har Sinai, you had the totality of Klal Yisrael. They had the totality of Klal Yisrael all entering into a covenant together. So nowadays, whenever you have a Gerus candidate, you have to mimic Har Sinai. You need to have a Klal Yisrael accepting the new Gerim to join their ranks, but you can't have the totality of Klal Yisrael at every single gear. So the Beis Din represents the totality of Klal Yisrael. We are the Ba'ei Koach, we're the stand-ins for the rest of Klal Yisrael, that we accept the new candidate, we make a decision on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Are we going to admit this new candidate, or we're not going to admit this new candidate? So we see that every single component of the gear process was there at Har Sinai, but the centerpiece was an Aseh V'Nishma. That's why it's very surprising and very astounding, really, that there are those who want to suggest that the Kabbalah's Ol Mitzvos is not such an indispensable part of the gear process. It probably is the essence of the Geirus process. So Avital Zhelty wrote an essay a number of years ago in the Torah Sheva'al Peh journal in which she pointed out that there were those who are medactic on the Lashon of the Rambam. The Rambam goes through the different steps of Geirus and Hilchos Yisurei Bia, so he doesn't seem to focus on Kabbalah Sol Mitzvah so much, and there's a Bach in his commentary to the Torah in Hilchos Geirim in Yoredeah. There's a Bach that says, well, the Rambam didn't really hold that Kabbalah Sol Mitzvah is Miyakim. Probably that's not exactly what the Bach meant. If you look at the context in which the Bach made that statement, it's too revolutionary a statement for to be made in a kind of a matter-of-fact, sort of casual way, the way that it's kind of like a throwaway line in the middle of the box. It's probably not exactly what he meant. He probably meant it in a particular context, or was talking about whether or not the Beis Din is Miyakev, a different side issue as opposed to whether Kabbalah Sol Mitzvah itself is Miyakev. But if you look at the Rambam in various other places, you know, that's maybe in Perek Yudalim, he talks about the steps. He doesn't mention Kabbalah Sol Mitzvah, but when he talks about just the entry level into Geirus in Perek Yudgimel of Hilchos Yisurei Bia, he says, when somebody wants to learn to be Mekabel Sol Mitzvah, so this is what they have to do. So clearly, the Rambam is understanding it as a prerequisite. It's a prerequisite to the Geirus process. So what Tzal Zhalti said, it's the Yisod, it's the foundation, it's the prerequisite. Then you have the ritual steps of Mila and Tvila in front of a Beis Din, but the prerequisite for Geirus is Kabbalah Sol Mitzvah. So Shlomo Amar, who was the Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, he's now the rabbah of Yerushalayim, the Sephardic chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. So he points out that if you look at the Lashon HaRambam, when he says a ger sherotze lizgayer, a ger who wants to be misgayer, so these are, you know, he has to take the following steps, and one of them is he talks about a ger who wants to be part of entering Tafkas Kanvei Bar Yisrael, the Kanes, some Lashon, he talks about to enter into the people of Israel. So clearly, becoming a ger is not merely entering into the people of Israel. The word misgaya must mean something in addition to that. So he says, he quotes one of the Rishonim as explaining that the word misgaya itself means Kabbalah Sol Mitzvah, that there has to be an acceptance of the Yoke Mitzvah. And what the Rambam does say is that Hodas Mitzvah is not Me'akev. If you left out something when you're coaching a Geirus candidate, you didn't tell a Geirus candidate every single detail regarding the Torah. You only covered 580 mitzvahs. You didn't cover 106.13. Or you only covered 12 mitzvahs. You didn't cover the entire curriculum. So the Rambam says that Hodas HaMitzvahs is not Miyakev. But the Chemda says Shlomo, this is a very important sheet in Hilchos Geirus. Rav Shlomo Lifshitz, I think he was a dayan in Vilna. So Rav Shlomo Lifshitz said that you have to distinguish between Hodas HaMitzvahs and Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. So Jews at Har Sinai also, they didn't know everything. We always say that this was the greatness of the Kabbalah Satorah at Har Sinai. They said, Naseh V'nishma. They said, we're going to do everything V'nishma, and then we'll learn what we need to know, and we'll learn the details afterwards. So they didn't know all the details ahead of time. Despite the fact they didn't know the details ahead of time, they still were prepared to accept the Kol HaTorah Kula. So that's Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. They didn't have the full Hodah HaMitzvahs. They didn't know everything yet. So it's the same thing with the Ger. The Ger doesn't know everything yet, even if you didn't tell the Ger everything, but the Kabbalah the Ger has to do. However, it's important to share it in part as much as possible before the Geirus process. The Minchas Alozer says you have to teach the Ger how to speak Hebrew so that the Ger will know how to daven properly. You have to teach the Ger brachos so that when you convert the Ger, you're not going to put somebody in a line of fire where they're just going to be committing averus left and right. They have to know the ground rules, so that they'll be able to perform mitzvos properly. So on that basis, you have to prepare the Ger and give the Ger the tools for day-to-day living. At least that the Ger is going to need to know Shabbos Kashrus, if they're going to get married, Taras and Mishpacha, they need to know the brachos, they need to know Tefillah, they need to know just the essentials of life in order to be able to function as full-fledged Jews as soon as they perform their Gerus. So he says, otherwise it's a violation on the part of the Beis Din of the Fnei Iver to bring somebody into Klal Yisrael, not to give them the requisite tools. So that's why when we have Geirus candidates nowadays, we make sure that we teach them very thoroughly, and we test them very thoroughly before they enter into the fold, because they need to have a high level of content. They need to have a high level of content in terms of their knowledge of the mitzvos that is necessary, for them to perform. In Eretz Yisrael, there was more of a discussion regarding kind of the baseline of Kabbalah Sal Mitzvos, because they have more of a crisis situation over there with all the Russian Olim that in many cases are not actually Jewish, but they're part of the Jewish community over there, and many of them will be serving the army, and they'll be part of Israeli society, and Israeli society is primarily a Jewish society, and they came to Israel to be part of the Jewish society of Israel, and yet many of them are not completely observant, and many of them are, you know, not Jewish. So they're not halakhically Jewish. The mothers weren't Jewish. They thought they were Jewish, but they have no evidence that proving that they're Jewish. But in many cases, it's just very clear that they're not halakhically Jewish. So what are you going to do? Let's say you can't get them to the point where they're going to observe, you know, Shabbos and Kashrus and Taharas and Mishpacha in the optimal fashion. So there was a tshuva already, a number in the early part of the 20th century by Rav Chaim Moser Grudzinski. Rav Chaim Moser was the major posek of European Jewry. He lived in Lithuania. He wrote the Shailos Tshuvos of Achiezer. And in the Shailos Tshuvos of Achiezer, in Chayvet Gimel Simon Chabab, so he talks about what are kind of like the baseline standards for a Geirus to take place. And in the course of that tshuva, he makes the argument. He goes back and forth. He mostly, the tshuva talks about the seriousness of Geirus and how you can't have a Geir exclude a particular mitzvah from their kabbalah. It's not going to be valid. But he said, if you know that the Geir is going to violate a number of averus, not because they don't accept the validity of the Torah, they're prepared to accept the validity of the Torah, they're prepared to commit themselves, that they know that they're supposed to follow the Torah when they become Jewish. They're not rejecting anything, but they're going to do it l'teyavot. They happen to live amidst circumstances and the like where they're simply not going to have the wherewithal to withstand various temptations when it comes to violating the various. If it's a man, maybe you know ahead of time, he's not really going to be so careful about tefillin, he's not going to be so careful about brachos. Same thing with a woman, she's not going to die, she's not going to say brachos, she's not going to, you know, be so ay ay ay. In every single aspect, she's not going to be so meticulous about the Tilas Yadayim and various things that are pretty clear ahead of time. So why are you involved with these people altogether? So Chaim Moser was unfortunately dealing with a situation that's become a major scourge. You know, it was a scourge back then, and it has been really for the last 150 years or so, and it's only gotten worse, and that is intermarriage within the Jewish community. So sometimes a person in Jewish man or woman brings home a non-Jewish girlfriend, boyfriend, and they want to get married. And the reason why they got involved with them in the first place, the Jewish partner got involved, is because they weren't so observant, obviously. That's why they got involved. So now this person's they want them to convert to Judaism because the family doesn't want to allow for an intermarriage. Maybe the Jewish partner also doesn't want to get intermarried per se, so they want their significant other, so to speak, to convert it to Judaism, but they're not going to upgrade their observance in any meaningful fashion. So therefore, the expectation is that the person they marry is not going to really be terribly observant either. So this is not a situation that is viewed as ideal. The Gemara in Yavama says that you're not really supposed to accept somebody who converts L'shem Ishus. It should be L'shem Shemayim. Really, you should only accept a convert who's converting because they're fully in love with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, they're in love with Judaism, they're in love with Torah, that's why they want to convert, not because they're in love with a particular man, they're in love with a particular Jewish man or Jewish woman, that's not a reason for conversion. But the Gemara says at the end, quotes Rav is saying, Halacha kulam geirim hein b'di'evid, if such a conversion would be performed, so b'di'evid the geiris would be good. And there's a Tshuva Saramam that Rav Chaim Moser found and that certain other Achbonim found as well, who says that sometimes you have to rely upon this b'di'evit in a shas adchak situation based on eis lasos l'ashem mekberit torasecha, that if you have a real crisis situation, so sometimes you have to rely on on the fact that that it's going to be valid after the fact, even though halakhically you're not supposed to really perform such a geirus. If you perform such a geirus, the person is converting to marry a Jewish man, a Jewish woman, is a separate halakha, that if they were suspected of being together with a person beforehand, and arguably kal v'chomer if they were actually living together, which is true in some of these cases, they're already civilly married to each other, So then they're not supposed to get married to each other afterwards. So, you know, number one, you're not supposed to perform the conversion lechatchila. Number two, you're not supposed to marry them lechatchila. So both of these things are considered to be of the bidyavet, and you can perform the geris. But Tosa says you can only perform the geris in batuach shesof on lasos l'shem shemayim, that when a person starts the process and they don't appear to be so sincere, so then you can go forward with it. Only when you feel that there's going to be sincerity at the end of the day. So the Beis Din deals with these individuals and tries to make that determination that there's going to be sincerity at the end of the day, rather than converting them right away, rather than converting them precipitously. But you need to have some sort of a baseline. You need to have some sort of a minimal standard in terms of accepting them into the fold. So Chaim Moses said, if they're just going to violate a various l'teyavon, so he thought it's considered to be dvarim shibboleth. These are things that are just inside of their heart. It's not actually expressed that they're going to violate the Torah. They're not saying chutz midavar echad, that they're rejecting a particular mitzvah. So he thought you could perform the conversion, but he said this wouldn't be true if there's nundar demuchach. This wouldn't be true if you know for a fact that the biggies, the big ticket items that essentially define the essence of what it means to be a Torah observant Jew, when we are looking at people and we're trying to, you know, to define their status, their affiliation. So he said the big ticket items, if you know you're not going to observe those, so then you can't convert them. What are the big ticket items? Shmira Shabbos, Kashrus, and then he writes in another Tshuva Taras of Mishpachas. So he said if you're not going to keep the big ticket items, so then don't even get involved. But if it's the other items of day-to-day observance that you're pretty sure they're going to violate the Teyavon, so it's Dvar Mishabalev and you can be Mako. That was his Chub, and the Dvar Avam, the Kovnerov, didn't like that. He said that Dvar Mishabalev, Dvar Mishabalev, Belev Kol Adam. The whole world knows that they're not going to keep these other mitzvahs, so that's not a Kabbalah. Kabbalah has to be that you have, there's a really reasonable modicum of expectation that they're going to keep all of the mitzvahs, and they're not going to reject things. There are two different ways of interpreting the tshuva of Chaim Moser. Why did he draw a distinction with respect to Shabbos, Kashrus, and Taras Mishpach and all the other mitzvahs? So you can understand it either in terms of scope, or you can understand it in terms of degree. You can say that in terms of the scope of the observance, so he required these basics. He required sort of the basics of Orthodox Judaism in order to say that there is a real acceptance, a real Kabbalah Satorah. And for the other thing, so then he relied upon this Svara of Dvarim Shibalei, but you need to have a certain content, a certain baseline of accepting certain essentials in order even to be Mekel B'dievet, and that's, and so therefore it's an issue of content. Or you could say, well, it's an issue of degree, that even when, what does it mean that to say that, oh, we're going to be a little bit lenient, because even those mitzvahs that the people are going to violate, it's only the teyavon, but really deep down they're really accepting it. So it could be that what he meant was that if you know they're not going to keep Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras and Shabbos, then I really, who are you kidding? So then you can't really fool yourself and say, oh, they're really accepting everything. It's just that they might be giving in to irresistible temptation. No, they're not accepting it. You can't claim that deep down there's a real acceptance if they're not going to keep Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras and Mishpacha. Really two different ways of understanding the tshuva of Chaim Moser. Perhaps that explains why Rav Moshe Feinstein, so he talks about after the fact, if you converted somebody, especially in these types of situations where it's the shem ishus, where it's for the sake of marriage, do we say that after the fact that it was a valid conversion, if it was done in front of at least an Orthodox Beis Din that decided that they're going to accept the geir? So he said he has a Kabbalah from his father. You don't find so many Jews of Moshe where he's directly quoting his father. This is one of those occasions. He said, my father told me, you know, you can't challenge me in this one. But he has a Kabbalah from his father that if a geir converted, and you know for sure that the whole thing was just a sham, and the whole thing was just an absolute fraud when the geir was in the mikveh, even though they didn't say, I'm rejecting a particular mitzvah, I'm rejecting Shabbos, I'm rejecting Kashrus, but everybody knew that they're not going to keep a thing. They're not going to keep, you know, one tiny little item of anything. They just, you have a completely secular Jewish man who is marrying a completely non-Jewish woman, and she goes in the mikveh, and afterwards they're going to celebrate at McDonald's. and she's going to celebrate the Kratzmacht and put up the tree and light the candles on the tree and so forth. And you know that there's mamish nothing that's going to be going, nothing Jewish is going on over here. So he says that it doesn't matter if the Beis Din was made up of three Orthodox rabbis with very long beards. The Geiris is Batel and Mevatel, it's completely null and void. But then he has another tshuva in which he says, let's say somebody converted and they really intended to be Jewish, but they're and they have three Orthodox rabbis who perform the conversion, or three Shama Shabbos rabbis who perform the conversion, and the woman's living in a community where there's a lot of Chilul Shabbos, and she doesn't know that the way she thinks that Shabbos means that you light candles and you have a Kiddush and a Shabbos meal, she doesn't know that you're not supposed to get in a car. She doesn't know that some of the things that are being done on Shabbos, to recook food on Shabbos, whatever she's doing, is prohibited because she sees that people are doing it. People are, you know, are recooking their soup on Shabbos and things like that, and because they don't know any better, they don't know the distinction between solids and liquids, whatever it is. There's a certain amount of Chilul Shabbos that's going on in the community because people just don't know the halakhos. It might not even be as egregious as driving a car, but other things that are also malachos. But so do we say that the Geiris is void? So he has a svara. Doesn't say for sure. He says it could be that the Geiris would still be valid if she intended to accept Shabbos, but she just didn't know that Shabbos entails more than what the people in the community are doing. So this is a svara that's relied upon, for example, when a woman converts in, let's say, a modern Orthodox setting, and people aren't so careful about tznius, about their necklines, about the covering of the hair. So she intended to accept all of the Torah. She just didn't know that there are stricter standards than that which she observes in her community. It could be that in those situations that could potentially be a valid geiris, because what we're looking at to some degree is the degree of a commitment. Was there a genuine commitment? And you know, maybe it was just the person didn't have the requisite knowledge. But Moshe also says that it's inevitable that we of course hold ourselves and everybody to a very high standard. But it's inevitable that people will have a yetzer hara and they'll have certain challenges in life. That's not equivalent to a rejection of Kol Tzarku. It's a woman who converted, and she had in her mind when she was about to convert, she didn't tell anybody. She didn't tell anybody until maybe, I don't know, 15 years later. But she went to convert, and it was difficult at that time. She was separating herself from her secular connections, from the expectations at work, where they weren't used to her taking off on Shabbos and so forth. And she was thinking, I'm taking off on Shabbos. I'm taking off the first days of Pesach. But the people at my work, they're not going to understand, in addition to Seder night and Shabbos and everything else that I've taken upon myself, that there's also something known as Yom Tov Achron of Pesach, that like the last 2 days of Pesach are also, holiday days. That's going to be way too much for them. And she said, I don't know how I'm going to explain that to my boss, and maybe I'll go into work, but I'll do it in such a way, maybe it was within walking distance, I'll do it that I'll only violate the Rabbanans, and I'll be careful not to, whatever she understood about the Rabbanans and the Rices, but she'll try to minimize it as much as possible. She didn't absolutely decide that she's going to violate Yatziv, but she thought to herself, she's not sure how she's going to overcome that challenge. And in fact, Kachaya, that she went to, work for those 2 days, she did, whatever it is that she did, maybe she may have violated the Rices as well. And she felt very, very bad. Now she was building a beautiful Yiddish family, and she was firm in every other respect. And then she went crying to Rav Moshe, is my Geirus, retroactively null and void because of the fact that I had this reservation. So Rav Moshe said, first of all, why should I believe you that you had this reservation? That you didn't tell the Beis Din you had this reservation, and as far as they could tell, you were completely sincere. But secondly, he says that this is a part of human nature, that sometimes, a person, will have a yetzer hara, and hopefully you'll always be able to overcome it at every single juncture. But you knew that it would be wrong to work. You accept upon yourself that you're going to keep Shabbos, you're going to keep Yom Tov. You had a yetzer hara about, for this particular challenge. Hopefully you would be able to overcome it. L'maaseh, you weren't successful. Sorry, we have Yom Kippur. We have, the ability for people to do tshuva. That doesn't cause you not to become be Jewish because of the fact that you are nervous that it's going to be harder to keep all the mitzvahs properly, and sometimes people, unfortunately, are nitchel. God willing, none of us should ever be nitchel, but it does happen. It's one of the reasons that, we have the concept of tshuva. So that itself would not be a derogation of the process of Kabbalah so mitzvah. So Moshe also says something else very, very interesting, that I think Baruch Shekivanti, it could be, it's one of these things where I have the kavanah Like what Moshe wrote, it could be one of these things where I read what he wrote and then forgot that I had read it and then just remembered, you know, the halacha, and then saw, oh, what do you know, Moshe writes this. So, you know, you never really know in these situations. But I remember having this discussion with one of the Israeli Rabbanim, who's very involved with Geirus. He came to visit in America, and we were talking about Geirus L'Shem Ishus. And I mentioned that, you know, Geirus L'Shem Ishus, obviously you have to be very, very circumspect, as we mentioned. There's even a Lashon in the Rambam, which is a whole big debate and discussion that we can't really get into right today. I'm just really touching upon a lot of Rashi Farkim, a lot of things, you know, very, very quickly and superficially. But there's a Rambam that says that when a person does convert for ulterior purposes, which usually is L'Shem Ishus, Choshen L'Arshis Bar Sikuso, that we, you know, we watch them carefully until we could be 100% sure that they were really sincere. So what does that mean? If a person converts for ulterior purposes, we don't give them their Geirus certificate right away. It's like kind of 6 month or 1 year waiting period until we see that they're actually observant. There were those who wanted to say that, but the Rambam seems to indicate, at least in part of what he writes, it goes back and forth, that the person, even if they were backslide, they would still be a halakhically valid convert if we felt at the moment that they converted that they were sincere, but they would just be like a Yisrael Mumar. They would be like a Jew who went off the fold and stopped being observant, because he or she would still be Jewish. The same thing would be true of this individual as well. I mean, what the Rambam just meant, and I think this is how Rav Soloveitchik understood it, was that we just wouldn't, there were two different classes of Geirim. There's like a Geir Tzedek, there are those who are on the highest level of Geirus, and they have to be treated like kings and queens, and, you know, given all of the most royal and superlative treatments. The Sefer Chinuch says part of the mitzvah of Ahav Temes Geir, loving the Geir, is that you have to think to yourself, what can I do to make this Geir's life easier and better in every single way? So there's one class of people who have to be treated that way, Geir Tzedek, and then you have, you know, like Geirim Gruim. You have like people who converted in front of a Bezin Shehayoto, so maybe B'di'eret, we would say that they're Jewish, but if they don't comport themselves on a very high level of observance, so we're not going to give them the treatment of Geir Tzedek. Maybe that's what the Rambam meant, that, you know, I'm not going to rely upon this person to be a Mashgiach. I'm not going to treat this person with all of the bells and whistles that I would employ when I'm relating to a Geir Tzedek. That's a question mark. But that's when a person is converting to marry a Jewish woman or a Jewish man. And, you know, Baruch Hashem, I have to say that, you know, with the conversions that we perform nowadays, and sometimes there is a Jewish man, there is a Jewish woman in the picture, that is true. But we did a survey, this past summer, in which we examined everybody who converted, like, call it L'Shem Ishus, where there was a Jewish man and Jewish woman in the picture. 3 years after the fact, 5 years after the fact, we found that upwards of 90% everybody was still extremely firm, was still extremely committed. That's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing. The Ritva says that agav unse gamar umekabel, that when a person converts, even if it's for ulterior purposes, if they want to be part of the community, so then they're going to have a full-fledged Kabbalah Sol Mitzvah. So then later, you know, authority said, like Herzog said, yeah, but nowadays a person can convert and there are so many Jews who are not so observant, and can we really apply the Svara of the Ritva to say Agav Unse Gamar Umekabel? So he said it's more suspect whether we could say it nowadays. Then, you know, fast forward another, you know, 50 years or so, Rabbi Yosef wrote a tshuva and said, well, nowadays, you don't have to be convert to be, like, accepted, because in many quarters, unfortunately, of the Jewish community, particularly outside of the Orthodox world, intermarriage is considered to be perfectly acceptable. So if they actually go through the effort of coming in front of an Orthodox Bezdin and wanting to go through this Geirus process and wanting to be part of, you know, the Orthodox community, nobody is putting a gun to their head. They could be part of any, like, Jewish community and be intermarried and be the chairman of, you know, Jewish bonds or whatever. And be treated with, you know, all of the respect in the world. So then that shows that they really are sincere and they really are serious. So we've gone back to that situation. So the truth is that in many cases, people show up in front of the Chicago Rabbinical Council. They don't have to be in front of us. We have very, very high and exacting standards and so forth. So usually that means that they really are serious about integrating into the Fung community. And we require them to integrate before we perform the conversion anyway. So Baruch Hashem, there is a, you know, a high success rate. So the discussion that we had is, a number of the converts nowadays, 75% or so, because, you know, I'm the chairman of the GPS, the Geirus Protocols and Standards, or whatever it stands for, for the Rabbinical Council of America, where it's like a network of a dozen Batei Din throughout, you know, North America that operate according to certain standards. And, you know, I think, you know, Baruch Hashem, by and large, it's a very good system. And Rabbi Zilberman is the director of, you know, the whole GPS system. It's Rabbi Ram is the menahel of the New York branch, which is the most active branch, and you probably know a little bit about it. So Rabbi Zilberman, you know, sometimes does these statistical studies, and he determined that 75% or so, 70 to 75% of gayim are women. Are women? Very, very interesting. And a lot of them are young women who are converting, not necessarily because there's a Jewish man in the picture, sometimes there is, but they're converting because of the fact that in many cases, we ask them, what brings you to Judaism? They say, we just love the stability and the beauty of the Jewish family. We just love it. We love the Jewish family. We just, you know, we see what's out there in the secular world. There's so much that is, you know, crazy and degenerate and wild and, you know, immoral. And the Jewish family is so stable and it's so beautiful. And you have Shabbos and you have Yontif and you have the Vankite of the Jewish home. I just want to build a Jewish home. I want to find a Jewish husband, and build an Orthodox Jewish husband, build a Torah household because they're so beautiful. And that's why I'm converting, not because it's an actual Jewish man in the picture itself. So is that converting? Is that considered to be converting for the sake of Ishus? So Moshe finds and says, no, that's a beautiful reason to convert. It's a beautiful, legitimate reason to convert. You don't reject a gayer's candidate. They want to convert to Judaism because they just are so attracted to the beauty of Torah and a Torah home and a Torah household, and they just want to build a Jewish home. That's a beautiful thing. He says that's why the Medrash says that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were punished for not accepting Timnah. Timnah ha'isa pilegish. She wanted to convert the Jewish people. They wouldn't accept her, so eventually she had to marry Eliphaz as a concubine, I mean a full-fledged wife, a concubine of Eliphaz, who was the son of Esav, and together they had a Amalek. So bad things came out of the fact that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov refused to accept her. So he asked the question, why did they refuse to accept her? It says, because she wanted to convert to Judaism to marry a Jewish man, to marry somebody from like this lineage, an Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov type of personality. Not that she had a specific Jewish boyfriend, but that's what she wanted. They felt, oh, that's the Shem Ishus, so we shouldn't be mekabel her. So he says that was a mistake. That really, you have to be, you should be mekabel somebody like that. That seems to be a possible pshat, even of the Gemara in Menachos. Gemara Menachos talks about some yeshiva guy who was a little bit tilted to being off the derech, and he went to visit a zona, and he was about to commit an avera with her, and then his tzitzis smacked him in the face, and the tzitzis rescued him from the avera, and he said, oh, that's it, I can't stand, I can't do this. And she said, why, is there something wrong? Am I not pretty enough for you? And so forth. He said, no, just that we have this mitzvah known as tzitzis, and the tzitzis, katam skomisos Hashem, vasisem osam, it reminded me of my Torah obligations, and, you know, I can't commit the sin, so sorry, I have to leave. So she said, wow, I'm so impressed with you, please, like, write down your name, and write down the name of your Rebbe, which somehow he did, I don't know. So he, you know, left her with, you know, this information, and then, you know, she went to visit the yeshiva, and she said, I want to convert to Judaism. I said, why do you want to convert to Judaism? She gave this, you know, a piece of paper, and she said the incident that happened to, like, the Rosh Yeshiva, and the Rosh Yeshiva said, oh, you know, that if you were so inspired by this incident, of course, that we will take you and we will convert you, and that now, instead of, you know, you're having a relationship by aveira with this man, you'll be able to have an aveira relationship with this man by mitzvah. Go and you should marry this man. So some say that, you know, one way of interpreting the story, Tosfos and Shabbos seems to interpret it this way, is that she really wanted to convert, to marry this particular man, but nonetheless it was permissible in this case because it was a sofan that the Rosh Yeshiva saw, sofan lasos l'shem shemayim, that, you know, even though she had an interest in this man, she was, you know, ultimately doing this for sincere purposes. But another way of interpreting the story is that she was saying, I was so inspired by how this yeshiva bachur behaved and how he had these higher ideals and a higher morality that I want to join that people, to which the Rosh Yeshiva said, I want to, like, marry somebody who has these types of values. And the Rosh Yeshiva said, you don't have to marry somebody else, you just marry him. He happens to be available, so, you know, maybe that's a good shidduch. But, you know, so I think that you can also understand that story along these lines. So anyway, getting back to Eretz Yisrael. So in Eretz Yisrael, you have, you know, the situation with the Russians, and, you know, with the question of, well, is it healthy for Jewish society to have all these people who are not Jewish, who, you know, are also committed to Jewish ideals, committed to the Jewish state, committed to the Jewish army, and not have them, you know, convert to Judaism? And that's why you have a major debate. Now, as you saw, you have a lot of, you know, conversions where there's a big, big machlokus about whether to recognize the conversions, not recognize the conversions, perform the conversions in the first place, not perform the conversions, and then people don't end up being observant afterwards. So if Unterman, of Avisa Unterman, who was chief rabbi for a period of time in Eretz Yisrael, so he thought that one should exercise a kula, especially with Russian olim, this is going back decades already, that one should be more lenient with them because of the fact, he said, why is it that we're normally suspect when people are, you know, not necessarily converting for the most sincere reasons and so forth? Because they come from an avodah zarah society, and we're afraid they're going to go back to that society. But here, they're not. They were never steeped in the avodah society. They were outsiders in whatever kind of communist land where they lived. They certainly didn't feel like an affinity for, you know, whatever was the religion or non-religion of that land. The only affinity that they really feel is to be part of Israel, because this is the nation that they really want to join. So when you don't have this fear of them backsliding to be over the Avodah Zarah again, he thought that you could be a more mako with respect to Kabbalah Samitzis. What he didn't quote, which sort of, well, I don't remember that he quoted, was the Tosus and Daf Mem Zayin and Aleph in Yevamos, because the Tosus there actually has like a havamina that maybe you should only accept Gerim from Eretz Yisrael, not from Chutz La'aretz. And the Gemara says, well, why? It's not like a Mitzvah Shebegufo. The idea of Gerim, it's like, what difference should it make whether in Eretz Yisrael or whether they're in Chutz La'aretz? So the Tosos asked the question, because the Gemara seems to like have a special pasuk to show that you can even apply to Chutz La'aretz. So Tosos asked, so why would I have thought it's only Eretz Yisrael? So he said, because I would have thought that Eretz Yisrael is different because of Shivka Da'ar Yisrael. Because Eretz Yisrael, there is more of an expectation and more of a probability that the people will remain Jewish identified because of the greatness and the beauty of Eretz Yisrael. So you could argue, maybe, that within Eretz Yisrael, when there's like Shivka Da'ar Yisrael, that there isn't this competition of other, you know, societies of the same type of, you know, assimilation of other cultures around you. Everything is 100% Jewish. You know, Sukkot time, wherever you go, there's a sukkah all over the place. Pesach is a national holiday, in addition to being, you know, a religious holiday, that, you know, everything is so incredibly Jewish, and the people are self-sacrificing themselves, you know, and joining the Jewish army and standing up for the Jewish people and so forth. I could see, you know, based on that Tosfos, a little bit of an argument towards, you know, perhaps, you know, greater flexibility within Eretz Yisrael. But of course, you know, this has to be understood within the prism and the parameters of Kabbalah Shel Mitzvos being a major, you know, prerequisite in terms of accepting somebody as a ger and making sure that you have a valid gerus. But, you know, I can understand the argument a little bit better. Yes?
Does that svar hold water, Bismana, said that it's true that the society is overwhelmingly Jewish, but not overwhelmingly Shomer Mitzvos?
Right.
So Jewish identity in the broader sense of,
you know, I think we have to see. I think we have to see. You know, one of the beautiful things that I've seen in Eretz, I think we've all seen in Eretz Yisrael during our lifetimes. Those of us who are a little older have seen it more. You know, we've seen kind of the trajectory. You know, more in terms of where we've started from and where we've gone into. But I see that the direction that things have moved in Eretz Yisrael has been much more positive in terms of the number of people who are keeping mitzvahs, in terms of the high profile of Torah mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't mean that there isn't still a lot of antagonism or a lot of work to do, or certain, you know, towns and communities in Eretz Yisrael that is still, you know, largely secular and the like. But I think that it is moving much more in that direction, where there's a much greater Torah awareness overall in Eretz Yisrael, a much greater Torah demographic all over in Eretz Yisrael. So, you know, certainly it's easier to, especially if a person is going to place themselves in those demographics. You know, Rabbi Yosef and his tshuvas, look, the person's going to end up on a secular kibbutz, so then there isn't really room for the lenient, you know, considerations and the like. But if the person is going to, you know, place themselves in a community where you know that there's a tremendous amount of Torah mitzvahs that are being observed, and we don't really have the competition of any non-Jewish cultures, for example, where they can just get lost, you know, and give up their Judaism entirely. I mean, here in America, a person can convert and they could just go 20 miles in any direction, and they could be completely swallowed up in a non-Jewish type of atmosphere. You don't have that, you know, in Eretz Yisrael altogether. So I think it's a consideration. All I'm saying is that it's a consideration. It's something that I think about a lot, because I found this issue to be very controversial. When I was, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, you know, I go there a lot and I speak at Dayanim's conferences, and I speak to the Dayanim who are involved in these types of determinations. One of my friends is a Dayan on the Beis Din LeGiur in Yerushalayim under the auspices of the Rabbanut. So I have conversations with people about these issues. So, you know, there was this big case in Eretz Yisrael a number of years ago, in which, not so many years ago, maybe it was 10 years ago, in which there was a woman who went for a get, and she had been converted by the Rabbanut, and she got married, and then she got divorced. unfortunately. And at the get, the rabbi who was presiding over the get wrote, I'm not responsible. Ein anu achrayim, we're not responsible for the Yahadusa shel Aisha to verify that this woman is Jewish because she's never been observant. So maybe the geris wasn't valid. This is despite the fact that the geris was performed by the rabbanut and the rabbanut performed the marriage. But, you know, that's the way it is. So the woman then contested the way this notation that was on her petor and said, how could my status be questioned when I had a valid geris under the auspices of a recognized rabbinical court under the, you know, the chief rabbinate? And the case went to the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim, and the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim had had a number of such cases in the previous years, and they had a dayan on the Beis Din known as Shlomo Duchovsky, who's a big Talmud Chacham, a wonderful dayan. And Shlomo Duchovsky felt that all these cases, if there was a valid, responsible Beis Din that made the determination that the geiris was valid at the time, so then you have no right to cast aspersions, to ask questions on the geiris afterwards. And usually, in most cases, you have a herkeh, you have a sitting panel of three dayanim. So Duchovsky and one other dayan would, you know, come around to his position, and even if he didn't have a unanimous court, so that was that was the general gist of the decisions that were issued in these cases. But then Rav Duchovsky retired. He reached like having mandatory retirement age, and the person who had been the dissenter on previous decisions, Rav Avram Sherman, now found himself in the majority. So the first case that came in front of him, Rav Avram Sherman, wrote a decision in which he ruled that all of these cases, if a person converted, and at the time of the, and we can go back and see that they were never really observant, so how can you say that the conversion was valid? You have to really cast aspersions on it, and he had a problem with this particular Beis Din was performing all these conversions in the first place. He felt that it was not being done with integrity, and therefore he wrote a decision that seemed to cast questions on the validity of, you know, thousands of conversions that had been performed by this particular geiris panel, and everybody was going crazy. And I was kind of like, you know, reading the decisions. It was very interesting. Well, Sherman had, you know, strong arguments. Certainly, if there was no kabbalas mitzvahs, we know where Moshe's position was. He certainly had some valid points that he was making. Rav Duchovsky, even though he wasn't on the panel, but he wrote his own articles in opposition to Rav Sherman's position, in which he said that basically you have to look at the convert when they go into the mikvah, bashir husham, that the Beis Din has to make the determination, is the person sincere at that moment? When they go under the water, if they're sincere at that moment, even if 2 days later they start to backslide, we don't, you know, question the conversion. So I thought that was also like a little bit of an extreme position. What if, you know, it turns out that the whole thing that was a fraud perpetrated on the Beis Din, the person said that I intend to keep mitzvahs, but it's clear that the person never intended to keep a single thing. You know, Rabbi Haskell Lookstein, Shlib and Be Well, had a conversation with Rav Soloveitchik. Rabbi Lookstein has performed many conversions over the years. He was actually even a member of the GPS of Manhattan Beis Din when it was first formed. Rabbi Lookstein asked Rav Soloveitchik kind of what were the necessary prerequisites for a person who converted to be viewed as Jewish if they go off afterwards and they completely reject every tenet of Judaism. At what point do we say that the conversion was valid? So Rabbi Soloveitchik, according to his testimony, said, well, they have to, like, you know, keep something. It has to be like some observance that they're going to perform. If they perform some observance, even if it was only for a very short period after the conversion, then we say that they were Jewish, and then they're just like a Jewish sinner if they should transgress afterwards. So that's why Rabbi Lookstein has the practice that every single time he performs a geris, he always gives the ger a cookie. You know what happens if you give a ger a cookie? So then the ger makes a bracha. He says the Berei Menei Mizonos, and that's it. So he performs something. So then he's not worried about the conversion becoming invalid afterwards. So Rav Shechter, Shlita talks a little bit about this, saying that he thinks it probably should be more than a bracha on a cookie, that, you know, there's also the point with the rug. Probably had in mind is that the person has to accept a certain amount of kedusha. Kedusha means they accept certain restrictions. They're observing Shabbos, they're observing Yantiv, they're observing Kashrus, a certain notion of, you know, staying away from things that are also. There has to be an acceptance of the kedusha Yisrael, but, you know, you have that idea. But you see that a person, you know, mamish didn't keep anything, so that does become a question mark. So I was at one of these Dayanus conferences, and I met with Rav Sherman, and I said to Rav Sherman, I said, did you really mean to cast into question all of the thousands of conversions that were, you know, performed over the years by this particular Beis Din? Presumably there were some people who had, you know, higher sincerity, the probably people who are keeping mitzvahs, people who have formed families and have children who are growing up and going to yeshiva. I mean, it would be a monumental a catastrophe if all of these people, you know, now have to be treated as non-Jews. So he said, no, I didn't really mean it. So I said, so what exactly, you know, then, you know, so why did you write it? So he said, what I really meant is that you have to look at every single case. You can't just assume just because a person went through a conversion that they're 100%, you know, by their Jewish, if it turns out, based on your investigation, that they never really kept anything. You have to be responsible about it. But obviously, you know, if you investigate a case and, you know, everything checks out, I didn't mean to say that, you know, everybody has to suddenly panic and, you know, feel that they're, you know, not Jewish. I said, okay, so I appreciated the clarification. But then I met a little while later with Bob Duchovsky, who was, you know, had this other svara that, you know, sounded like he was saying everything was valid. So I said to Bob Duchovsky, you mean to say that, you know, even if a person perpetrates, you know, an absolute, you know, fraud and hoodwinks, you know, the Besdin, that the Geiris, you know, is going to be valid, that, like, every single Geiris, you know, out there is going to be valid, notwithstanding what Ramoshe, you know, said in the name of his father? So he said, no, I didn't really mean it. So I said to Bob Duchovsky, so, you know, so why did you write? Like, what exactly do you have in mind? He said, well, what I really meant to say is that you shouldn't question the Besdin and the integrity of the Besdin. If it's an Orthodox, you know, properly convened Besdin that performed the conversion, you can't have other Bati Din second-guessing, you know, what one Besdin did, because then you would just have absolute havoc and chaos throughout the entire, you know, Besdin system and throughout all of Klal Yisrael. You have to give the Besdin the jurisdiction to make that determination themselves. If a Besdin does a Geiris, and they determine afterwards that they were scandalized and that they were hoodwinked and that they were defrauded, they were railroaded, and that the candidate lied to them and deceived them, and therefore they say that the whole thing was a mekachtos, the whole thing was a geiris betos, and therefore we can't stand behind this conversion. So, you know, by all means, that's their prerogative. But he didn't feel that it was good halachic policy, shall we say, for other Bati Din, you know, 20 years later, to go question the original Beis Din, and then to, for all converts, to feel that their geiris can never really be, you know, secure, and can never really be permanently relied upon. That would be onas hager on some basic level. You know, Tosis points out that we have, you know, 24, 36, or 46 places in the Torah, depending on how you count, in which we are commanded not to oppress, you know, a ger, and to love a ger, and ger osonev lo sochatzeno, v'avtemis a ger, and to treat the ger, you know, with the utmost respect. So therefore, it's incumbent upon us and not to create all these hurdles and obstacles when it comes to the recognition of a person's geros. But of course, the original Beis Din panel has the ability to come to the conclusion that they were defrauded by a particular geros candidate. They're not going to stand behind the conversion. So I think that there's a balancing act when it comes to these things. I mean, a Beis Din has to really be, you know, very, very careful. The Rav Shlomo Zalman Obel points out that it's like a double-edged sword, right? It's in the Minchas Shlomo that there's like a lifnei iver consideration akin to what the Minchas Elazar was talking about when he said, well, you have to, you know, educate a year, you know, ahead of time, that there's a double-sorted lifnei iver consideration. That, let's say, that you perform a geirus that is not valid because there really wasn't a proper kabbalah mitzvah. So then it's a terrible lifnei iver that, you know, you are setting loose somebody that you are certifying as Jewish and they're not really Jewish. I mean, you can't, you know, there's a tremendous responsibility to do a geirus and then to declare somebody as Jewish if, halachically speaking, there's really an argument that there was, you know, something missing in the kabbalah mitzvah, so they're not really Jewish. It's like if you would leave out the milah, you would leave out the tefillah. So, no, that's a very, you know, serious transgression. That you're being macho people with intermarriage, bishul akum, etc., etc., etc. But on the other hand, he says, it's also a lifnei iver if the person only has a very low baseline acceptance of mitzvahs and that they're practically, you know, not keeping anything. And let's say that the geiris is going to be a valid geiris on a b'di'evid level. It's still a lifnei iver on the geiris candidate himself or herself because you're letting loose somebody who now is Jewish. And they're going to be committing averos left and right because of the fact that you didn't ensure that there was a requisite commitment, you didn't ensure there was a requisite sincerity, you didn't ensure that there was a requisite community that's going to reinforce this person, a requisite, you know, support system that's going to ensure that this person remain 100% observant. So that's something that we as Dayanim are always extremely mindful about whenever we do averos, to make sure, you know, it takes a village to raise a geiris, like to say, to make sure that there is this, you know, full support system in place for the geiris, to make sure, number one, that we have investigated and that we have confirmed the sincerity and the commitment of geiris candidates. And I have to tell you, you know, there's a statement in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Thelba, Kashim Gemlis Yisoh Kasapachas, that Gerim are as difficult to Jewish people as a wart on the skin, which doesn't sound very nice. There are different interpretations about what this means, and you know, one interpretation is that sometimes they backslide. But another interpretation, which Tosos quotes actually in the name of Rabbi Avraham Hager, Rabbi Avraham Hager gives this interpretation. The Rav used to use this as a proof that you can, if Hager could receive smicha. So Rabbi Avraham Hager said that what it really means is that Gerim very often they put us to shame, that they create warts because they expose our warts. Because the Gerim are so often so incredibly sincere, so committed, they have such a love for every single aspect of Torah that they're being introduced to, that this is, you know, what's a, that they are making a conscious, affirmative decision that they're going to embrace all these obligations. Not like they were born with these obligations and responsibilities, they're taking upon themselves all of these additional mitzvahs, all these additional chiyuvim, that they are just, you know, sometimes I am just blown away. By the tremendous commitment that they gave him. I'm often blown away by it. So we have, you know, a responsibility. Obviously, there's a mitzvah, as the Gemara indicates, of Shihu Yemitzvah Lo Mashinan. You find somebody who's sincere, you have an obligation to convert them. There's an actual mitzvah to perform a gerus. So we have a responsibility to clarify, you know, who are those sincere gerim, but at the same time, to make sure that they have the requisite level of sincerity, because the flip side is, and it says Tosfos, so that you know, so Gemara in Yavamas, it says acharot tovel makabagerim, bad things happen if you accept converts too quickly, or that you're not supposed to solicit converts, you're not supposed to go and put up a sign saying, please convert to Judaism today, we have a great program, and you know, it'll cost you $10,000 and we want to get rich. You're not supposed to solicit Gerus candidates, and you're also not supposed to convert them too soon before making sure, like Rus, to make sure that they're misamates, to make sure that they have the requisite commitment and that they have the requisite desire, the requisite yearning, that they are constantly persevering and plugging away at staying in the process of wanting to become a full-fledged Jew. But we make sure that we ascertain all of those details and that the person becomes fully integrated into a community, to a phone community, they have a sponsoring rabbi, that they have a support system. And if you have, and you put all these ingredients in place, and I think that really is the responsibility of the Beis Din on behalf of the Shekhinah, on behalf of Klal Yisrael, that is the responsibility of the Beis Din. So then it can be a very, very beautiful thing to pave the way for, you know, valid gerim to enter into the fold. So, you know, it's something which is, you know, not a b'di'evet, it's something which we're supposed to do in a l'chatzchila fashion. I once heard a shir from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who said that you know, when it comes to like resolving an anguna case, you're supposed to have like compassion. So here's not, it's not about compassion, it's about like responsibility. A person's not a proper ger, so no matter how much compassion you have for them, you can't accept them. But a person's a proper ger, so you have real achrayus to make this person a part of Klal Yisrael. So I'll just conclude with the statement in the Gemara Pesachim that says, Lohiglo kesh barakol es Yisrael v'ein umos elokadesh nitoso lehem gerim. Kodesh Baruch Hu placed us in Golos. One of the reasons that those of us, you know, who are in Golos are here in Golos is that we're supposed to find all of those sincere individuals who were meant ultimately to join the Jewish people. There is a notion that there is a penumbra of holiness of all of these people at Har Sinai, Mazalayu Habusham. The Gemara in Shabbos says that they had a mazel, they had a guardian angel at Har Sinai, that they weren't physically there, but their mazel was there at Har Sinai, that they were meant to ultimately convert, and then it's our job to identify these individuals to make sure that we have a proper gerus structure for them so that they can convert in the proper and optimal fashion, that they shouldn't have hardships and headaches afterwards, that everybody should recognize the gerus when it is in fact done properly. Okay, we'll stop here.
Thank you so much.
Okay, welcome to you.